Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. As the field of Democratic nominees shrinks, with the Iowa caucus just weeks away, newspapers around the country are gearing up to publish their endorsements in the Democratic primary. But we wanted to hear from you. Do you pay attention to political endorsements from newspapers?
Priscilla Moss from Randolph, Ohio. I do consider what newspapers write about candidates because I usually get at least one new perspective or issue I hadn't considered. However, I always consider the source.
This is Karen from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I pay attention to the issues and the candidates' positions, but endorsements don't sway me.
Hi, my name is Dawn. I'm from Clearwater, and I read and watch as much info as possible on the candidates. The paper's opinions, however, are opinions, but it does warrant a look as to why they've endorsed one candidate or another.
My name is David from Highland Falls. I don't pay attention to the paper's endorsements. I listen to the broadcast news, and I also listen to the candidates speak and pay attention to what they say.
You can keep calling us to weigh in at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Overall, however, trust in the media has been dropping for decades, and studies say many Americans can't tell the difference between news and opinion. So when people see a headline or even a tweet of a newspaper endorsing a certain candidate, that could leave some readers wondering if the news reporting by that paper is also biased. Now, some newspapers are rethinking not only their endorsement process, but their entire editorial and opinion sections. Joining me now are two people who are working on these issues in their own newsrooms. Colleen McCain-Nelson is vice president and editorial page editor of the Kansas City Star, and David Haynes is editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
David, we are in a, no surprise to most Americans, a very contested political moment right now. Tell us, when did you and other members of the editorial team at the Journal Sentinel start thinking about changing how you do endorsements?
Well, for us, it started in 2012 when we had a very contentious recall election for our then governor, Governor Scott Walker. But after that was over, we started to think about, are endorsements really working for us? And so we were sort of skeptical. And we said at the time, we're going to sort of avoid doing them. Then along came 2016, and we had Donald Trump. And so we decided in the primary that year to break our then policy of not doing endorsements and weigh in that election. We endorsed Governor Kasich of Ohio.
Now, when you changed the policy, David, did you hear from readers? Newspaper readers in particular are very passionate about their paper. And so did readers reach out and say either way whether they agreed or disagreed with your decision?
We heard from a few readers, but to be honest, the reaction was quite muted. And that told me something. It told me that maybe newspaper endorsements, and I would say that was a state election, but particularly I would argue when a regional paper like ours endorses in a national election, I really question the impact that we can have.
Colleen, let's turn to you, because before you came to the Kansas City Star, you were an editorial columnist and writer for the Dallas Morning News. By 2016, you were covering the White House for the Wall Street Journal, and you were not at the Morning News when they made their historic endorsement of Hillary Clinton. But do you have thoughts on that endorsement and on the blowback that the Morning News received?
Right. Well, I watched very carefully and with great interest when the Morning News made that endorsement because I had been on the editorial board and I had gone through a couple presidential elections on the Dallas Morning News editorial board. And we had been very regimented and very thorough in the process that we'd gone through in terms of researching the candidates and considering their positions on issues and considering how they matched up with our views as an editorial board. And I'm not sure that for all of our hard work that we ever moved the needle. I never had a reader tell me, gosh, you absolutely changed my view about whom to vote for president. And so I was interested to see when the Morning News endorsed Hillary Clinton. It was historic because they'd not endorsed a Democrat for decades, and they got attention on CNN and, you know, got some national attention in the media, but they also had a whole lot of subscribers cancel their subscriptions, and I'm not sure that they really changed minds. And that got me thinking about the value of endorsements like that for readers of local papers. And are we really providing readers information they can't find other places? Are we really providing them unique insights by making presidential endorsements when we're a local newspaper focused generally on local and regional issues?
But Colleen, you now have a very different approach at the Kansas City Star. Tell us about the restructuring of the opinion section at that paper.
Right. In Kansas City, we have gone a different direction in that we've actually expanded our editorial board in the last few years and really invested in opinion journalism with the idea that opinion journalism done well, focused intensely on local issues and girded by strong original reporting can really help drive readership and have an impact in the community. And so we have a large editorial board for a paper of our size at the Kansas City Star. We have a lot of folks who were reporters and now are opinion writers. And we focus almost exclusively on local issues or issues with local connections.
David, at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you all didn't just eliminate endorsements. You eliminated the opinion section altogether. Tell us about that.
So what we did, we broke up our editorial board. We saw through the analytics we were looking at and through anecdotally from readers that it wasn't working any longer. We didn't have an audience, and without an audience, you don't have impact. And so we decided to, in its place, start doing solutions journalism, which is reporting on responses to social issues in your community and then looking for the evidence to see if that evidence backs up the ideas to solve those problems. But what we're finding so far is the uptake from our audience is much greater. We're seeing maybe double the audience that we saw with traditional commentary. I think it does have something to do with the proactive sort of rest of the storytelling that we're doing with solutions.
Colleen, let's talk about the generational gaps in your readers as well, or differences, I should say, because one of the things that's happening is that it's becoming increasingly difficult to differentiate between what news is and opinion. And I'm wondering, is that something that you are noticing among your readership as you guys increase your focus on opinion and commentary?
Absolutely. That's a really good point. And as the print newspaper has become less and less prominent, and as more people read everything online and just kind of scroll through Twitter or look at their Facebook feed, you don't have kind of the traditional guideposts showing you what's opinion and what's news, and you just see all of these headlines flashing by with really, in a lot of cases, very little guidance. And so that's something that we think and talk a lot about and really work hard to label our work to provide readers with not only clear guidance on who's writing what, what's opinion, what's news, but also providing transparency. And I think, you know, in the past, opinion and editorial boards were kind of a mysterious entity where editorials were handed down from on high, kind of on stone tablets. So a lot of things that we've done at the Star have been focused on pulling back the curtain and providing readers with transparency, telling them not only this is an opinion, but for instance, when we do endorsements, we have how we did this box in the editorials telling readers who the members of the editorial board are, what our process is for doing endorsements, explaining that we won't endorse candidates unless we actually sit down and interview them, providing them, you know, a deep look into the process so that they can actually see our work and not just the end work product. We really want readers to understand how we do our work and all of the labor and research and reporting that goes into what they see as the final editorial product.
I'm wondering, this is something that a lot of news organizations are grappling with, right? Particularly in this moment where, and which I think is, dare I say, somewhat unprecedented, at least in my lifetime, that the president of the United States is often one who is attacking journalists and calling journalists writ large, quote, the enemy of the people, dismissing reporting as fake news. Do you feel, Colleen, that that's part of the reason why, whether the focus is commentary and opinion or straight news, again, quote unquote, that you need to provide this level of transparency to readers? And are readers, does it matter to them?
I think it does matter to readers. And I think readers have sometimes have struggled to kind of differentiate between what is credible journalism and well-reported journalism versus something that is just kind of, you know, the equivalent of a blog post thrown up with, you know, no actual insightful knowledge or reporting behind it. And so I think it's important for readers. I think transparency is important regardless of whether Donald Trump is in the White House, but I think he has made this all the more urgent by virtue of the fact that he does cry fake news and try to cast reporters as the enemy of the people. And we certainly see a trickle-down effect with other politicians stealing from Trump's playbook. We published an editorial this week about a retired police chief who was involved in a sketchy deal. And while our reporting was very clear and we backed everything up with documents and facts, the retired police chief immediately took to Twitter and said, it's fake news, and just kind of dismissed it with a wave of his hand. And so it's important for us to be able to come back and say, here are the documents that show that this is true, and here's the reporting that we did, so that you can't just wave your hand and say fake news. And so there's a lot of work behind the words that we write, and it's important for us to show that work.
What about in Milwaukee, David? Are you finding that some of your readers are either seeing the media through the president's perspective or doubling down and wanting more transparency from you all on how the process is done? Or does it matter to them at all?
No, I think it does matter. And we definitely are seeing the same things that my friend Colleen is seeing down in Kansas City. And so I just think that trust is an incredibly important asset that we have to protect and maintain. And so transparency, as Colleen mentioned, is incredibly important. But we see the same sort of thing, this sort of mocking tone from politicians locally. And I keep wondering if that fever might break eventually, but it hasn't so far. And I think we just have to continue to keep working really hard to explain what we do, to back up everything we do, to be very careful with what we do, and to not be afraid, not toot our own horn, but explain, because I think readers don't always understand how we work. And pulling back that curtain, as Colleen mentioned, I think is really important.
David Haynes is the editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Ideas Lab, and Colleen McCain-Nelson is the vice president and editorial page editor of the Kansas City Star. Thanks to you both for joining us.
You bet.
Thank you.